Well, on page 11 of the notes, we outline here what the focus is of the internet consulting practice. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that there are solutions for specific customers. There's all sorts of different industries here, and I wish we had time to talk about all of them. Mm-hmm. But just as by way of an example, let's focus on retail. Can you give us an example of what you refer to here as an electronic commerce application?
Well, I don't know if you've heard about a lot of the work that's being done actually out in Europe right now to put together a electronic mall, a shopping mall for a company where certain vendors or other service providers could have space on a home page, and within this company, the employees would have the opportunity to buy products. Maybe it would be CDs, maybe it would be groceries even. Mm-hmm. It could be a number of different things. Maybe it would be working through a bank that has access to the inside internet that a company might have. That in its simplest form is electronic commerce. There are a number of companies right now who are really looking seriously into selling products on the internet. You can go to the Dilbert Zone and you can buy a Dilbert doll on the internet today. So they're getting through all these security issues, and it's getting to the point where electronic commerce is going to become a reality very shortly in mass. It'll be done everywhere.
Right. One of the key pieces to making this work, of course, is the technology. I guess during this conference, we've sort of downplayed the technology by talking about how easy it is. Mm-hmm. But, for example, there's one piece of it that's mentioned on page 12 here as we talk about the consulting solutions that are available. In the third bullet, it mentions the domain name system, or DNS. I've heard that bandied about a lot. What is that?
In its simplest form, the domain name system is a big database. Years ago, when we were first starting to communicate on a TCP/IP networks, you would need to have a list of all the computer names in your system and all the addresses that those would be, attached to, so that when you would type in Telnet, which is a way to get to another system, Telnet to a certain name of a computer, it would go and it would traverse this small database on your system, which would typically maybe have 50 names in it, and it would say, okay, that's this address, 15.31.104.32 or something like that. Well, as time goes on, and if you think of the World Wide Web, it's so huge. How would you ever be able to maintain a database like that? So domain name system takes care of that for you. There are servers in different domains which sync themselves up with other servers and basically take care of all the addressing. So when you say go to www.hp.com from your own internet, it goes to the com domain, and it looks there, and then it says, HP.com is down here, and then it goes over to the HP domain, and then it points to the right system for you.
Okay. Now, earlier today, Seth talked about some of the questions that have been raised about the internet, mm-hmm. and particularly, he mentioned security as being an issue. You talk about some of the solutions to that problem on page 13.
Right.
And you mentioned internet firewalls, and in particular, custom internet firewalls. Tell us a little bit about what firewalls do, and in particular, why I'd want a custom firewall built for me.
Clients' needs are different, and a certain company may want to implement a very highly secured banking solution, for instance.
Sure.
And with that, you need to go further than just a firewall. You need to maybe go to a secured network inside of the company. You need to maybe have a secured kernel of an operating system wrapped around the server that the data is being passed back to the client on. And so the commercial firewall solutions do not always meet a customer's needs, what it really amounts to. And what we have done for some clients is to design firewall solutions that not only include a firewall, but include application and server security in them also.
I see. Okay. Well, Paul, in just a couple of minutes, we're going to open up the microphones here for people to call in with their questions. But just while they're thinking about that, let's just wrap up here with one last question, and it's sort of self-serving, but I think it's important. Why do you feel customers should choose Hewlett-Packard in particular to help them put these internet-based solutions together?
Well, as Jan said, we're not just dealing on the tip of the iceberg here. If you think about it, we're number one in a lot of these different areas, and we have a lot of different solutions to offer a client, be them electronic messaging, data management, all the different web server packages that are available, the firewalls, all our hardware, our number one Unix, and our consulting and support. So we really have a total solution. We're not just going for part of it and hoping that somebody else supports us in the other areas.
I understand. Okay, Paul, well, thanks very much for being with us today. And what we're going to do now is, Paul, if you'll stay with us for the Q&A section here.
Sure.
We will open up the microphones to our listeners for interactive questions and answers. Okay, thank you. Now, just before we go away to your questions, I should mention that because our time is limited, we fully realize at the beginning of this that we're not going to be able to get to all of your questions at this time. So if you do have a question and we don't get to it in the next few minutes, remember that you can fax it to us. You can send it to me, George Stachnik, at area code 408-447-4952. Once again, that fax number is 408-447-4952, or you can send us email at Stachnik, and I'll spell that for you, S-T-A-C-H-N-I-K, at coop, that's C-U-P, dot H-P, dot com, C-O-M. Once again, that's Stachnik at coop, dot H-P, dot com, and Stachnik, once again, is S-T-A-C-H-N-I-K. And now we'll turn it over to Connex and take your questions.
At this time, if you have a question, please press the 1 on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw that question, just press the pound sign. Once again, if you have a question, please press the 1 on your touch-tone phone. And we'll take our first question from Jim Wood's location.
Do you guys plan on providing World Wide Web hosting services in the near future?
Okay, well, let Steph take that one.
No, we do not. We are fundamentally a technology and product company, and we are not in the service business. So we are partnering with service businesses that do provide those kinds of services. For example, AOL is one of our major customers, and we're letting them take on that kind of a thing. Now, of course, we do have a practice in outsourcing and taking over and supporting network management, but that's not what I think you're asking for.
Thanks.
We'll take our next question from Frank Trenery's location.
Hi, George. I'd just like to know what's planned for the 3,000, and what would 3,000 customers do? What would their first steps be?
Sure, absolutely. The interesting thing is today's broadcast is primarily focused on the 9,000, as you've probably figured out. We're not leaving the 3,000 out of this by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I was just yesterday able to conclude the agreement with our TV studio here. We'll be doing a video conference on the subject of the 3,000 and the Internet and the World Wide Web. The date is going to be in February. Unfortunately, I don't have an exact date to give you yet, but it is going to be happen in February. We'll have the announcement of the exact date in the HP Advisor, and it'll also be in the MPE News Group on the Internet.
But answer the question, George.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, actually, briefly, I can tell you that the 3000 can work, obviously, as a web server. Almost every piece of functionality is available today on the 9000 is also available on the 3000. We are in the process of porting some of the commercial software that's available for the 9000 over to the 3000 as well. And again, if you'll come back for the audio conference, the video conference in February, we'll have the details then. Thanks.
You mentioned there's security also on the 3000.
I'm not sure we're ready to announce that just yet.
Sorry.
But get ahead of me. We're ready to push on.
We'll take our next question from Lise Rajan's location.
I have a question about how easily and available the products from partners that offer the software solutions on HP 9000 series, such as Raptor Eagle Seal Systems, for evaluation purposes. Who coordinates that, and how easily it is accessible to our channel partners?
Interesting question. Paul, are you there? You got an answer to this one as well?
Well, to you're asking, if I can just rephrase it here, or paraphrase it, you're wondering how you're going to get your hands on some of these products yourself to learn about them?
To learn or resell or offer it to customers for evaluation purposes.
Okay, now, what I can give you some information on is how to get your hands on it to, you know, take a look at yourself, or how your clients can get their hands on it. A number of these companies have URLs, have locations that you can go to, and Netscape is certainly one of them, that allows you to take a test drive where you can get the code by registering and providing them with some information so you can try the product for a while. I mean, a perfect example of that is their browser, and although they do it with their servers also. And there are other companies that are doing this also. Beyond that, that's the extent of how I get some of that code into my consultants' hands. The other way is by calling the companies direct. They're usually very willing to provide that code on an evaluation basis.
The only reason I'm asking is that we found in our practice that in the beginning to obtain those packages was quite an obstacle to deliver a product to a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel as a channel partner that HP must somehow to coordinate this particular partnership in terms of product availability to an end customer.
Mm-hmm.
That's a comment.
Okay.
We'll take our next question from Sue Leto's location.
Hi, I have two questions. The first has to concerns our unique value proposition. I understand how we've been talking about our completeness of vision and how we know we can't do everything ourselves, but I don't understand how that distinguishes us from Sun or Silicon Graphics or Digital. My second question has to do with the security auditing practice and how we can assure customers that we have the technical wherewithal that they can trust us to design a secure network for them, and what assurances we can give a customer that that we can do that in terms of working with their auditing companies and indemnifying them against loss.
Okay, the first half of that, I think, would probably go to Terry if she's there.
No, Terry?
Okay. Seth, you want to cover that?
Yeah, the first question had to do with how is HP distinguishing itself from the other companies in this field? And I think the basic answer to this question is we are really focusing on the enterprise and on infrastructure within the enterprise. Some of our competitors have really focused on the very glamorous putting web pages out there, electronic catalogs for home shopping and entertainment and things of that sort. We are trying really to service and support our installed base of customers and help them understand the role of TCP/IP in productivity, internal productivity, and time to market, how to make companies more efficient by taking advantage of these networks and using the networks to reach out to suppliers, to strengthen links between corporations, business-to-business kinds of commerce. And we're working on also supporting remote work, people dialing in from home or people who are on the road. So we're really focusing on infrastructure and working with the corporations on productivity and time to market based on TCP/IP and wide area networking.
The other half of that question related to security, and I'll bounce that back to Paul if you're there.
Right. Let me first address the first part of a technical expertise. We have people within our practice who helped put the internet together for Hewlett-Packard, the infrastructure of that, dealing with issues that included security. So part of the typical process of working with a client to determine if we're the right provider of a security assessment or of firewall design or implementation services does include us showing the client our credentials, basically, and making sure that we meet their standards in that area. It is something where also in some of the people that we've hired from outside of Hewlett-Packard, they have expertise in that area and have worked on projects as they relate to security. In fact, there's one person in the practice that has written books on the subject of the Internet in various areas and is well known around the U.S. and basically around the world as an expert in that area. Security is kind of one of those issues where for a number of years it kind of went dormant, and now all of a sudden because of the Internet and the World Wide Web, boy, it's one of the hottest topics out there. So you're starting to see a lot of people who had focused in the area of security both within companies, client companies and vendor companies or consulting companies starting to come back to life because now there's finally a more of a market for that sort of service out there. As far as a guarantee for a secure environment, that's a really tough question, and we have been working with our corporate counsel on those issues. And how do you ever guarantee to a client that he's in a secure environment? And the bottom line is you really can't ever guarantee 100% that somebody's not going to be able to break into a system. Seth talked about how he put up a web homepage, and boom, all the high school kids and college kids are out there trying to hack at it and get in. And there's always going to be that risk that something like that is going to happen. The key is what you do back behind the firewall, in our mind, to make sure that you set up a robust infrastructure that has other security checkpoints in it that kind of keep people, if they get by one, they can't get by the next. And that's part of the area that we focus on is the overall security solution, not just based on a firewall, but based on application and infrastructure.
I'm going to jump in here because I know we're running very short of time, and I want to remind everybody that we have a second Q&A period that's coming up toward the end of the conference. So, Jennifer, I don't know if we have time for any more questions now, do we?
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, so why don't we go on to the second half of the conference then?
Well, so far this morning, we've been talking about a lot of the technical issues that are involved with moving your business to the Internet. Next, we're going to move forward and interview a couple of customers who have actually already taken the steps that we've been talking about. Our first guest in this segment then will be Michael Carlin. Michael is the president of Security First Network Bank. Michael, welcome to our audio conference this morning.
Thank you very much.
Okay, why don't we begin on page 15 of the notes here. Tell us just a little bit about Security First Network Bank and basically why you're here talking with us today.
Well, Security First Network Bank was established as the first internet bank on October 18th of this year. We went online and began opening checking accounts for internet users across the country. The idea really began in the summer of 1994 when the CEO of Cardinal Bankshares, which is the parent company for Security First, and his brother-in-law, who is the chief executive of a HP technology partner named Secureware, began talking about how to put a secure bank on the Internet and whether or not that was possible. At that time, we began the process of doing the due diligence necessary to really figure out if that was possible. And the things that we needed to be sure that we could cover were, A, we needed to make sure that it would be a completely secure environment. Second of all, we needed to make sure that before we ever went online that we obtained regulatory approval, because to the extent that we went online as a $40 million bank in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, and the regulators came in for their normal and customary exam and didn't quite understand what it was we were doing, chances are they'd ask us to take it offline, and sure, that could be catastrophic. The final thing that we really focused on was the fact that we knew we had to be first. To the extent that we were second to Bank of America or Wells Fargo or a bank with a large market share, we would be nothing but the second guys on the block and not even a yawn. So our objectives were to develop a secure bank, to develop a regulatory approved security architecture, and to be the first one there.
Okay. So that was a very ambitious set of business objectives then you were trying to work against. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the objectives, particularly for the Internet solution that you were developing? And I'm looking in the notes here on the next page, number 16.
Okay, sure. Well, again, the first item is provide protection against fraud, and that, again, works right into our security architecture. On a specific note, we were working with SecureWare, which over the last 7 or 8 years has worked with Hewlett-Packard and other Unix vendors to develop a trusted operating system for the U.S. government and Defense Department related contractors. And as such, we wanted to apply that trusted operating system technology to our problem. And we're able, with SecureWare's help, to develop the Secure Web Platform, which is essentially our bank riding on top of a World Wide Web server that is running on a B1 level secure operating system, which is the HP UX CMW version of the Hewlett-Packard operating system.
Okay. Let me ask how long it actually took to get this whole project implemented.
Well, we began again at the summer of last year. We had a design document completed by October, and between October of last year and October of this year, we were developing all of the interfaces, developing all of the database work, and that was all being done by a soon-to-be subsidiary of ours called Five Paces.
Mm-hmm.
And SecureWare was in the process of developing the Secure Web Platform, which, while it's been developed and refined over the last year, has hundreds of man-years invested in it, along with HP, to develop this B1 level grade operating system for the government.
I see. Well, we've been talking all morning here about technical issues that people have some concerns that have been raised about taking their business to the net. Maybe I should ask then, what was the most difficult part of this project? Were there technical issues that caused you troubles?
Well, no technical issues that were presenting themselves as a barrier to moving forward. I believe we built an excellent team working on the web-based and database level stuff, and we had the hundreds of man-years worth of experience within SecureWare to handle the security piece. So I think when you attack a problem like this with that much talent, you're going to end up with a smooth process. The biggest issue, again, was dealing with security and just making sure that existing technologies could be molded to meet our objectives.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next page then and get to the part that everybody's really interested in, and that would be, of course, the results. How did this finally turn out for you?
Well, that's the good news. On May of 1995, or in May of 1995, we received approval from the Office of Thrift Supervision, which is the government body that regulates the savings and loan industry. We are in the process of receiving Federal Reserve approval, which will allow us to resell this technology to other banks. And on October 18th of this year, we started the bank, opened it up to the public, and have received, in the first week alone, we signed up over 450 new customers and received over 500,000 hits to our server. So things are really going great, both for the bank and for Five Paces Software, which is going to be reselling this technology to other banks.
Okay, great. Well, Michael, I want to thank you for being with us this morning. I'm sure that our listeners are fascinated to hear about this, and you'll be with us later on in the Q&A session to take questions. Is that
sure.
Correct? Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now we'll move on to our next segment. For our next topic, we're going to turn to the use of the World Wide Web as a business tool in an internal corporate way for moving information around inside of a company. And to help us understand that, we're here with Steve Baker. Steve is the manager of sales communication for Hewlett-Packard's Computer Systems Organization. Steve's team has the responsibility for a sales tool called the Electronic Sales Partner, or ESP. This is the primary electronic communications tool for Hewlett-Packard's own computer systems sales force. Now, Steve's team has just completed a worldwide rollout of this tool, and Steve, thanks for being with us here today.
Thank you, George.
Why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about this ESP tool and what it is?
Well, first, George, let me start with the challenge that we had. HP has a sales force and a support organization of about 8,000 people worldwide. We also have about 200 people, 200 to 300 people within the marketing organization. submitting information and trying to communicate with the sales force, get them excited about selling their products.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge really is how do we quickly, efficiently, and effectively communicate with that sales force. What we've done with ESP is we've combined some web tools, specifically the Netscape browser and the Verity topic search engine, with about 13,000 files of information. And these are data sheets, sales literature, promotional material, program information, white papers, customer reference information.
You got all the bases covered there.
Exactly. And we've provided that information through the Netscape user interface and tied it together with the Verity topic search engine so that the rep anywhere within Hewlett-Packard can very quickly get access to those files.
Okay. Well, there's lots of different ways to distribute this information. Why in particular did we choose the World Wide Web as the infrastructure or the basis for this ESP tool?
I think there were really two reasons, George. First of all, our corporate IT organization put a foundation in place, both internal, the HP internal web, but also the tools that we needed, the Netscape browser and the Verity topic search engine. They really managed that relationship with those vendors and made those tools available internally. So my team didn't have to worry about that. My team could focus on tying the content together. And second of all, just the ease of those tools in the sales rep's mind. Very easy to use to then get access to the information that they want. We did not want a complex tool that the sales reps had to learn in order to get access to the marketing information.
Well, Steve, earlier today we heard some details about managing this World Wide Web technology, and I wonder, in your rollout, what was the biggest challenge that you faced? Was it the technology, or was it in some other area?
Interestingly enough, it really was not technology. The technology works. It's easy. It's simple. What the real challenge was is in two areas. The first and major one is content management, or what I would call knowledge management.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure that those 13,000 files, each one of them is up-to-date, current, accurate, and useful to the field?
I see.
The second, then, is how do we train the field on how to use the tool? And the tool itself is relatively straightforward, but how do we make them aware of it and get them comfortable using it? So content management and training.
Okay. Now, you just completed a rollout of this tool worldwide. That's a huge challenge. Trying to roll out anything on that scale is quite an achievement. What are the things that helped you support this implementation and made it happen so quickly?
Again, I think it's back to the tools being in place. We did not have to worry about the technology. The technology and the support from our IT organization on a worldwide basis was there. So that really enabled us to move forward quickly. Also, the easy use of the tools made that easy.
Well, now that you've got it rolled out and people are using it, are you beginning to see some of the benefits that you hoped for at the beginning of the project?
Definitely, and I think the key benefit is a cost savings to Hewlett-Packard in a very direct way, and that is making sure that the sales reps spend less time getting information and more time in front of their customers. We're getting direct feedback from the reps that they can get access to more than they were able to in the past,
mm-hmm.
and they can get access to it much more efficiently, much, much faster. They're spending less time getting information, more time giving it to their customers.
So distributing more information, and it sounds like doing it at a lower cost as well.
Exactly.
Okay.
And also from an information provider standpoint, if I'm a division marketing person, I know that I can create something and get it worldwide to my sales force in about 48 hours. And that's just significantly better than we were able to do in the old days.
Certainly beats FedExing paper all over the world.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up by asking one last question. If you had it to do all over again, how would you handle this project differently the second time around? Is there anything that you'd change?
What I would change is probably an increased emphasis on content management. People tend to get excited with the technology and what the technology can do, and that's certainly important. But I would put even more emphasis, if I had it to do over again, on the content management, making sure that information is there and accurate and timely. That will make or break this in the long run.
I see. So it's not the technology, it's getting the right information and solving real business problems with this. That's what's important.
Absolutely. The sales reps need this information. They need it quickly, and it needs to be up to date, and that's the primary objective.
Okay, Steve, thanks for being with us. I know you'll be joining us later on today for the Q&A period. Right now, we're going to go back to the boardroom to see how Rose Marie and Carl are coming along.
week?
Yep, in 1 week.
Rosemary, I've been through these new technology implementations before. There are always a lot of issues that need to be worked out, and the schedule always slips. Are you sure you're not being too aggressive?
I'm sure, Carl. The presentation that we got from HP was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. Not only did they have the concept worked out, but they were able to prototype a solution for us in minutes, during the meeting. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, Rosemary, this is true.
Bank on it, Carl.
Okay. Well, let's set up another meeting. Here, how does this Wednesday look to you?
Next Wednesday, that will be fine.
Good. We'll use that to review your progress. And
Carl, it won't be a progress review. By next week, we'll have a working solution all ready to go.
Well, good, good. Listen, what are you doing this afternoon?
This afternoon?
Yes, Tom and I were going to meet for a round of golf with a few of the other people from financials.
Well, actually, I've never played golf.
I think it's about time you learned, don't you think?
Yes, I guess it is.
So we've been looking at the challenges of moving to the Internet. I think you can see from that last vignette that Rosie has certainly met those challenges. It looks like Internet technology is going to be good for her career and hopefully for yours as well. What we're going to do now, though, is focus on the future, the long-term future of the Internet. And rejoining us, once again, is Seth Fury from Hewlett-Packard. Seth, welcome back.
Thanks, Rich.
We've heard a lot of concerns raised today about using the Internet and many of the solutions, but what is actually happening today to resolve some of these problems once and for all?
Well, a lot of people don't realize that the Internet is not fully this chaotic, total random environment out there. There actually is an organization that's planning the future of the Internet. There's actually two organizations. There's the Internet Society itself, which is a very large global organization, and then there's a subset called the Internet Engineering Task Force, which is developing the new standards and the new protocols for the future. What they're working on right now is IP version 6, and it's going to be released, it's still, I think, about a year away from implementation, but it addresses a number of very important issues.
Let's talk about what those are very specifically.
One of the big issues is we're going to run out of IP addresses.
Okay.
The current standard, I think, is on the order of 28, 32-bit addresses. They're going to move up to 128. So we're going to be able to dramatically increase the number of devices that you can connect to the Internet.
Now, that'll be more than one device for every human being on the planet, won't they?
You betcha. And people are really skeptical that this makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to realize there are already Coke machines out there that have IP addresses.
Mm-hmm.
So the future is information appliances, palm tops, wristwatches, refrigerators, I don't know what all, are going to have IP addresses.
Mm-hmm.
We need this kind of a change to the Internet protocol.
I see.
Another big protocol that they're testing right now is called RSVP. And this protocol allows you to reserve a piece of the bandwidth on the Internet, so you can do high bandwidth applications and really hold on to that line.
Mm-hmm.
This is an old concept, excuse me, to the telephone companies, but to the Internet world, this is a whole new paradigm. And it's going to be very exciting because one of the major applications is video, real smooth video that you're going to be able to see synchronized with the audio.
Right.
So we're very, very excited about that. And then, of course, there's new tools for reliability and security. For example, allowing you to send an email message that will be certified, so you'll get an automatic response back saying, yes, the person got it and read it, and you'll have that acknowledgement that you don't have today in the current protocol.
Putting an end to the problem of lost email messages.
Yes.
Now, I've been reading a lot in the papers lately about a literal flood of new tools for putting together Internet-based applications. There's things like Java, this language from Sun, new releases of Netscape. Are these things that people should be waiting for before they get started?
Well, the new release of Netscape 2.0 is actually available today. I was just looking at the Netscape site today, and you can download it right away if you're interested. It's got some very interesting new capabilities, particularly some tools for controlling the layout of the screen, which I think people are going to find very powerful for developing new kinds of applications.
I see.
Then there's Java and VRML, the virtual reality media language. These are exciting new tools. VRML, it looks like is going to be fairly practical next year. Java, I'm not so sure about. We've got a lot of concerns about the security. Java is sometimes seen
as a tool for propagating viruses. So we're evaluating the security level of Java.
I can see that's something you'd want to be very cautious of.
But it's a real paradigm shift. It's a whole new model of software development and applications. So I urge caution in that area.
Okay. Well, let's wrap up then, if we can here, Seth, by why don't you very quickly summarize for us how you think the web in particular, and then the Internet in general, are really going to be changing in the future. What are the biggest shifts we're going to see?
The shift that I see coming, and it's really coming fairly quickly, is the web today is fundamentally a publishing tool, a communications tool.
Yes.
The next generation is going to be using the web as a transaction tool.
Right.
And particularly, I'm very excited about business-to-business transactions being supported on the web. I'm very interested in EDI on the Internet. I'm very interested in the work of CommerceNet. And the forms capabilities and the security is going to make it safe for business. The other big change that's coming is the bandwidth is going to change dramatically. We're going to go through a whole new quantum leap as broadband is being delivered by the cable companies, for example. TCI is rolling out 25 megabits downstream to the home next door here in Sunnyvale. The same sort of capabilities might be possible inside a company's network using 100VG local area networks.
Mm-hmm.
When you see broadband on the Internet, it just blows you away.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's fun.
That's full motion video, hi-fi audio, all that sort of thing.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, Seth, thanks very much for being with us once again today. And that pretty well wraps up what we had to say about the web today. What we're going to do next is open things up for general questions and answers from you, our listening audience. So let's move on with that right now.
And we have many of our presenters that are still online with us. Paul Clouder from the PSO. Michael Carlin is with us online. Russell Lee is here, who did the design work for the ESP project that you heard about. And also Jim Zepp has joined us, who's the product manager for Internet Solutions. So just a reminder that if we don't get to your questions in the next few minutes, you can always leave us a fax at area 408-447-4952 or send us email at stacknick, that's STACHNIK, at coop, C-U-P, dot H-P, dot com, C-O-M. So let's take your questions now if we can.
Once again, if you do have a question, please press the 1 on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw that question, just press the pound sign.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, if you have a question, please press the 1 on your touch-tone phone. And we'll take our first question from Leslie Robinson's location.
Yeah, my question is in relation to the amount of time it's going to take away from the CPU. I'm a 9000. We have certain times during the month where we're already pushing our limits, and I don't know if the web server is going to take up more bandwidth than we need.
Okay, Jim, you want to?
Okay, this is Jim Zepp, product manager for HP Internet Solutions. Are you talking about which platform are you talking about?
We're running the 9000 with the HP UX operating system.
Okay, what version of HP UX are you running?
I don't know right off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, a couple things. Number one, the for doing vanilla web serving, where you're serving just flat file documents, the actual overhead on the CPU is actually very very low. What the web server taxes is really it will take additional memory and it will take additional I/O from your system, because obviously it's a lot of LAN I/O, a lot of disk I/O potentially, depending on how busy it is. Now, what you can do is with HPUX version 10, we have a product called Process Resource Manager. And Process Resource Manager on HPUX version 10 allows you to dedicate a specific amount of CPU and resources to your applications, so your mission-critical applications will not have to suffer from web. So you can allocate a specific minimum amount of CPU for your production applications.
Okay, can we push on to the next question?
We'll take our next question from Richard Martin's location.
Yes, hi guys. This is actually Eric Jacobs. We're with Innotech, a channel partner with HP. And we also have extensive experience working with the Internet from the backbone level and also with security with organizations that are doing electronic cash and credit card transactions over the Internet now. I just want to know how we as a channel partner could increase our visibility within HP and work in conjunction with the PSO as a partner. We've had an excellent relationship with the HP in the past, and we want to continue that into the future.
Sure, I'll take that. This is Paul Clouto speaking. I'm going to give you the name of a person that you can contact out in California. His name is Rod Smith, and he is coordinating all of our I'll call them channel partners, so that the way we're going to be handling working with other companies is that we'll work through Rod, and he will find us the right partner for the specific service that we're trying to provide. So I think it would make sense for you to probably contact him and talk with him about, you know, what you have to offer and how you'd like to work with the PSO specifically. How's that sound?
Great. Thank you very much. Do you have a telephone number?
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
Okay.
I've got too many Smiths in my palm tab here. Okay, it's area code 714-758-5608.
5608.
Right.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Beth also asks me to remind you that most third parties also have a sales rep that they can work through to get in contact with resources inside of HP.
Right.
And with that, we'll move on to the next question. Jennifer, the next question, please.
At this time, we have no further questions.
Okay, that puts us actually pretty close to our scheduled tail end of the conference here. Just to wrap things up then, what I'd like to do is introduce you, if I can, to the producer of today's program, who's with us here in the studio, Janet Van Bocklin-Boget. Janet?
Thank you, George. We have just a few final things to cover. First, if you would like more information on HP's Internet solutions, please look on page 19 and 20 of your notes, and you'll find instructions including an address for retrieving information from HP's World Wide Web server. Of course, you can also contact your local HP sales representative or HP reseller. Secondly, I'd like to invite all of you to join us on the December 6th for the Hewlett-Packard Strategic Directions video conference. This conference is for all customers who are currently using HP computing systems, including HP 9000 servers, workstations, and HP 3000 systems. To register by phone, call 1-800-333-7957. That's 1-800-333-7957. And now finally, I'd like to ask you to give us your feedback on how you found this conference. Please respond to each of the following questions using the keypad on your touch-tone phone. The first question, the audio conference met its objective. Press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, press 4 if you disagree, and press 5 if you disagree strongly. Again, the audio conference met its objective. Please press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, and press 4 if you disagree, or press 5 if you disagree strongly. Question number 2. The information provided was of high quality and valuable. Press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, press 4 if you disagree, and press 5 if you disagree strongly. Again, the information provided was of high quality and valuable. Please press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, and press 4 if you disagree. Press 5 if you disagree strongly. Question number 3. The information I received is relevant to my position. Press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion. Press 4 if you disagree, and press 5 if you disagree strongly. The information I received is relevant to my position. Please press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, and press 4 if you disagree. and press 5 if you disagree strongly. The color slide presentation is more effective in conveying the information than black and white slides. Press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, press 4 if you disagree, and press 5 if you disagree strongly. Question number 4 again. The color slide presentation was more effective in conveying information than black and white slides. Press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, and press 4 if you disagree, and press 5 if you disagree strongly. For those who were using the slide presentation on the World Wide Web, this was an easy and beneficial way to follow the speaker's presentation. Press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, press 4 if you disagree, and press 5 if you disagree strongly. Again, last question. For those who were using the slide presentation on the World Wide Web, this was an easy and beneficial way to follow the speaker's presentation. Please press 1 if you agree strongly, press 2 if you agree, press 3 if you have no opinion, and press 4 if you disagree, and press 5 if you disagree strongly. With that, I'd like to thank you on behalf of George and all of our presenters and guests today for joining us for this conference. And now, at this point, I'll turn it over to George for one last announcement.
Yeah, just very quickly, there were questions about future events that we're doing. Janet mentioned on December the 6th, we have the Strategic Directions video broadcasts coming up. On February the 12th, we'll be doing one of our technology close-up broadcasts. This is for our 3,000 customers on using 3,000 as web servers. On February the 29th, we will be doing our first technology close-up for HP UX customers. If you're using an HP 9000, you might be interested in participating in this broadcast on release 10.0 and beyond of HP UX in a commercial environment for Series 800 servers. In April, we will be doing a technology close-up television broadcast on using HP UX release 10.0 and beyond in a technical environment using HP UX workstations. So we have a number of events coming up in the near future. So, Janet?
Thanks again, and have a great day.